back again with another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. He's Scott Manzi. I'm Alex Turco. Feels a little bit more normal in the sense that Florida State got their ass kicked again. So we're back to normal, back to reality. He's Scott Manzi with his I Voted Early sticker, and I'm Alex Turco with my I Voted Early sticker. Did you vote? I don't know. You tell me.
A 100% voted podcast. How about that? We're doing our civic duty, and for that we should drink, I think.
You know, so we're back here in the Ice Mule Coolers studio, excited to watch Monday Night Football. He has his Devil Rays or Tampa Bay Rays jersey on, and they need a little luck here for a comeback. They had some luck the other night in an electric finish.
No doubt.
But we got a lot of football to get to. Exciting stuff in the NFL and college football. Big Ten was back. That was a welcome sight to see.
Full slate. We're going to get plenty into that coming up.
Full slate, but it really did kind of, you know, kick off the day in just a terrible, sour taste in your mouth the way Florida State got beat. And the worst part about this, I know we'll talk about my Turco trifecta coming up here. I'm consistent as hell on that, though, aren't I? One and two,
one
man.
One and two.
But that's my game. And then I knock down the locks of the week, you know? So noon kickoff, you start your morning, you know it's right around the corner, maybe a little college game day. High expectations this week off of a Florida State victory over North Carolina last week in a primetime slot. And now we go play a one-win Louisville team. Very disappointing season for the Cardinals, and you expect that momentum to continue. And as a fan, I referenced the trifecta. I went a little heavy on the Noles, man. And it's
tough.
Rule number one as a bettor, don't bet on your favorite team ever.
Bad choice.
And I did it. So, Scott, we had a rough Saturday, and I hate having to go back to where we were 2 weeks ago when we played Notre Dame and where we lost to Miami weeks before that, where you said, you know what, this team is just really far away. There's a lot of problems. And we saw it again. I mean, it's nice that we have that UNC win under our belt for something to cling to, but unfortunately, that's all we have to cling to.
Alex, we've kind of joked about it the weeks before that, Notre Dame, Miami before that, North Carolina last week. What's worse? Like, we were sitting there going, I kind of want to just play a noon game, kind of get it going, right? Like, waiting all day for these games is terrible.
The idea of it.
And then you play a noon game and you get your doors blown off and you're never really competitive from outside of one kind of flukish play on the first drive of the game. And you sit there and say, I kind of ruined the rest of my day. And maybe if the North Carolina game doesn't happen the week before, but no, because I came on this program and I said I was looking forward to this Louisville matchup for weeks anyway because I wanted to see how they stacked up against a so-called evenly matched team. And
team that's somewhat similar in the process of a rebuild. Somewhat similar.
Somewhat similar, but
little head start.
That was as good as Louisville's looked all season, undoubtedly. And for Florida State in this, I don't know if I said it to you on this program, if I said it to you offline, or if I just said it to myself one night in the shower or something like that. I knew that this, for Florida State, this wasn't going to be a linear process, right? This wasn't going to be, okay, the team played well, and now they won a game, and now they're just going to start rattling off wins all the time. I mean, we knew that this was more likely to be an opportunity for something to step back. Now, what I'm hoping...
Peaks and valleys type.
What I'm hoping is that this is a team that goes two steps forward, one step back, as opposed to, say, like, one step forward, two steps back. We definitely took two steps forward the weeks prior, right? The end of Jacksonville State into Notre Dame, into the win against North Carolina, and then that step back against Louisville. Now, it's imperative to see what this team does coming off of a bye week in a couple of weeks against a Pitt team that is really, really bad right now, and is really licking their own wounds. But we'll have time to talk about that before we get to it. What stood out about this game to you, though, on Saturday?
I mean, the answer is easy. It's a no-brainer. It's how bad that defense is. And you try and highlight moments here and moments there of a defensive progression over the weeks as my son is voicing his displeasure.
Yeah, he didn't like it either.
He didn't. No, Dad had to start drinking bourbon at freaking 3 o'clock. That's a tough day.
Yeah, that's a day
that
ends early.
That's a lot of work for me. God, think about me.
Back at bedtime's at 5 today.
Yeah,
Because daddy's bedtime's the same.
Yeah, I'll be sleeping with you. But it's that defense, man. I mean, yeah. Multiple games now where you've given up 500 yards offense. In fact, all of the games we've played this year, we've given up 500 yards offense, excluding Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And I came on this podcast. Did I even say it on this podcast? You tell me about defending Adam Fuller. My thoughts are.
I think we discussed it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So me and you had a very in-depth where we're like trading podcasts to listen to because we're trying to get to the bottom of this. It's like, hey, listen, I get that coronavirus didn't allow him to install it. Okay. We have understanding there. But 500 yards every single game is inexcusable. There's a lot of stuff there that I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of guys in position to make plays, and they didn't make plays. So then I come back to the thought of, well, there's a lot of talent here, but are they all broken? I thought this is a young guy. Did he just make a mistake because he's young? I don't know how to figure it out because there were multiple plays, multiple touchdowns, in fact, because it seemed like every play that Louisville had that was over 10 yards was a damn touchdown. Multiple times where there was a linebacker that didn't contain. Didn't have had outside contain wide open and got sucked in for some reason, or a DB got caught looking. There were a lot of things where it was like, well, that's not the coach's fault.
But there were so many moments in which it was second down and 18, and the next thing you know, it's a 75-yard play that either goes for a score or sets up a score.
I said and you're that sitting during there the saying, game. Second and 18, oh, God forbid you give up 19. No, they gave up 70 for a TD.
Well, I didn't actually I didn't watch this game because I don't get Fox Sports Florida, so I listened. First time all year, I had Gene and Bar None on, and
Scott's takes are now invalid.
William Floyd, who I'm not a huge fan of, but he was just sitting there going, where are the safeties? Like, why isn't anyone playing deep? Why is there, if it's second and 25, how are you getting beat to where there's keep things in front of you? Like, the whole purpose should be, we're not going to give up 25 on this play. You should never give up 75 because you're gambling on a second and 25. And that's where I'm starting to wonder if, like, where is the disconnect, like you said? Where is this not going from the messenger to the receiver? How where is the break in the line in this process that is currently leading to a group that really outside of the first half against North Carolina and maybe the second half against Notre Dame, maybe the fourth quarter against Notre Dame, they don't have a whole lot of moments that they can sit there and point to and say, yeah, that was impressive. And for as good as the D-line, or at least as disruptive as the D-line was against North Carolina, because even when they weren't making great plays against North Carolina, they were in the backfield the whole game against a pretty good O-line. And they were just non-existent in this Louisville game. And it was
when they had a push, the linebackers were not there.
And then it's, you know how it is, too. I mean, if the D-line actually does get pressure, then the linebackers got to fill, and then their linebackers aren't filling. Or the somebody forces somebody outside, and it's one-on-one, and the DB doesn't make a play. It's just, there was just a dearth of playmaking on Saturday.
It was really, really frustrating to watch, especially given that the first drive, we go down there and you go, oh my gosh, Travis is electric. He's got this system down. He's playing within himself. He's making easy throws. And then you didn't see that the rest of the game.
No. Outside of like maybe there was that drive where they scored late in the second quarter where it felt like, okay, things are going well. And then they drove down before the end of the half, came away with nothing. But it was blips as opposed to. And we know that this offense probably isn't equipped to just sit there and march all the way up and down the field. And this Louisville defense
first is... First down is so important. If you
you have to stay ahead of the sticks.
Yeah, and it's cliche for coaches to say that, like, oh, got to stay ahead of the chains. But when you watch this offense, now that I've heard Dillingham say that multiple interviews, I'll watch a first down very intently and go, uh-oh, that could be a problem. Because we got a yard or we didn't get any gain of substance, you know? But how about the receivers, man? We need Terry back. They're terrible.
Yeah. They had a nice week against North Carolina, but they're just not. They lack playmaking ability.
Supposed to be like Mr. Consistency.
Yeah.
I guess Warren Thompson didn't do anything bad or good. He had a catch.
He had a catch.
And Jordan Young kind of had his first meaningful playing time, true meaningful catches. I felt like a first down at a point, made a move. But, man, they are frustrating. It's really frustrating.
It comes down to this, Alex. I'm looking at this team right now heading into this bye week, and I say all too often we have seen kind of a trifecta of bad, right? Short drives on offense, bad penalties, big plays allowed on defense. And this team isn't going to consistently get better until they figure out to kill at least two of those three things, right? Or fix at least two of those three things. So whether it's the team's just flat out not good enough to overcome all of the problems it has right now on a consistent basis. And the two things, the offense, I just don't think it has the personnel to sit there and be super consistent the rest of the season. But the two things that they can work on getting fixed over this bye week, they've got to knock off the knucklehead penalties, the bad penalties, the late hits, the just the ones that are very preventable. I mean, a holding call. I'd kill for a holding call on offense just for the sheer fact that at least that's like an effort penalty. Right. None of these penalties are effort ones. They're all bad penalties.
Mental
penalties. And then for defense, they've got to figure out a way to just get on the same page. And that's it. I mean, it sounds like it's an oversimplification.
I just don't know where you said, where's the disconnect? Where's the problem? Because let's find it and address it. Man, I hate knee-jerk reaction. And earlier in the season, you're in a group text. Some of our listeners, Mike was texting me. Listener Mike Yashi was listening, texting me, and we were talking about the game as he was driving home. I just couldn't text him back because we were just playing so bad. He was like, "How are we looking?" I was like, "I actually don't know how to text this. Like, I don't. Sorry for not texting you back, by the way." But I literally was just like, I don't even know how to respond to him because we are so incompetent right now. It's just like an open field, and Louisville's just playing a skeleton, seven on seven. Yeah. They're just.
It got to the point where I think with about 6 minutes to go, I turned it off, and I don't ever do that. You know that.
Purdy came in, dude.
We're both to the. I missed it. And I saw it after the fact. I was aware that
he
came in.
He's 0 for 9
and
had like 7 balls dropped.
Yeah.
I think it was like 4. But still, I mean, he looked good.
That's a sign that they're probably going to, I wouldn't be shocked if they work some packages in for him
in
the future.
Why not? It's not to say Jordan Travis is not your guy for this season, but time to work him in. The season's lost. Who cares about a continuity thing? What I mean by that, the season's not lost to where you still have a lot of building blocks that you have to check. You have a lot of boxes you have to check for this season.
It's lost in just a sheer like, is this team going to have a winning record or whatever like that?
Yes.
But no. It's time
to get Chuba worked in for next year. And
building
Travis
blocks
is still, Travis, in my opinion, right now, still your best option.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So let him do it. But I also don't think he's a guy that... When you fall behind, is he going to lead you back?
No, and that's part of his limitations. He's not a sit-there, drop-back passer. He's a stay-ahead-of-the-sticks guy. Like, the offense has to stay on time for him to be effective.
You know, it's so funny hearing us talk about, lost season, this, that, the other. Remember the question I posed to you last week? Where's Florida State in your eyes now? Wins?
We were talking about how many more. You were sitting there saying how many wins.
Yeah. Give me wins, losses, because... We just beat UNC. That's something to cling to, something to build on to. We have a bye after Louisville. Let's get that win, go into a bye, and then play a bad Pitt team. Oh, my gosh. What another one-week difference the complete opposite way.
Well, at the risk of being too overreactive, I will say that like because of the North Carolina game, that makes me not...
Makes you watch it.
it makes me want to, remember I said I wanted to go into the Louisville game and I feel like I would have, that was pre-North Carolina result, and I would feel like I would have a better idea where this team is at. I know what this team is capable of if they put together a pretty good effort, which is what they did against North Carolina, obviously.
They're capable of
beating a team like Louisville, a team like Pitt. Now, whether or not that team's going to go out there and actually do the things that are necessary to win, that's a different question.
If we lose to Cuse, Scott.
Well, that's...
I don't know what I'll do within reason,
but I'll have to
do something drastic.
We should give Cuse some credit for battling there with Clemson, but there's something about Dino Babers and Syracuse. They always seem to give Clemson a run for their
it's
money.
It's the orange. I think it just throws everyone off. Clemson's like, oh, well, this is just our scout team. We'll take it easy on
that. Spread was like 45. And
46.
Most people thought that was low.
Yeah.
I mean,
if I had to do it, I would have to take Cuse, but I didn't touch it.
Yeah.
And I had a friend that was like, why would you bet against Clemson? Because we were talking about that. The number was absurd. And I was like, it's not that I bet against Clemson. I just would be scared of that backdoor cover. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's like, they just dropped 73 on Georgia Tech. I was like, I know. That's why I'm staying away.
I know.
So, man, but hey, betting advice from me. Who knows these days? Best to stay away.
So what we're looking at right now, Noles are going into a bye. Jags also have a bye this week. I made the joke before we started recording. It's either going to be the best football weekend of the year or the worst. I don't know. I mean, when your teams aren't playing, but you know your teams can't lose, when they've done more of that than the other option this year, then maybe it will be good. But this is a big week, and I think it will lend itself to be, if this coaching, especially at the head, if Mike Norvell is all that we think he is, he's cracked up to be. This is a huge week in the sheer fact that he's got a win that he can show and say, this is what you do when you're right. He's got this past week to show and say, this is what it looks like when you're wrong, and then work on ironing out those issues for the next 2 weeks.
The way he coaches and the way we've seen him coach so far, oh my God.
That was a really bad throw.
So Jared Goff, for our listeners, just missed a wide open standing running back in a clean pocket by, we announced this for me, what, 4 yards?
I mean, yeah, it was a swing right out of the backfield, and he set his feet, and it looked like a first down easily, and he missed him by 4 yards, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
All right, well, lost my train of thought, I'm with you. So Mike Norvell, he's a guy that we've seen, whether he ends up being the guy or not, I still believe he is. I don't know about Fuller, but I still believe him and Dillingham have a good thing going. The offense has, that first drive is always scripted and always beautiful.
Yeah.
Everyone we play the first drive, you're like, damn, we're going to run a train today. And
it would be really discouraging. I hate to be a fan of a team that couldn't even
script up something.
Well, I guess
you
I'm
mean
a fan.
Willie Taggart.
I'm a fan of the Jacksonville Jaguars, too, and they haven't scored a first drive touchdown all season. So
yeah. Well, he's a very, very detail-oriented guy. You can't say that about our last coach. Whether they end up being the guy or not, the Norvell staff end up being the guys or not, it's a fact that he's detail-oriented. Yeah. So with all of this film, and these are the guys that are playing hard, these are the guys that we want to move forward with, this bye week is just going to double down on that, where we haven't seen Leonard Warner in 2 weeks now. It's like, hey, Leonard Warner, you are a great guy. We like you in the locker room, but, man, we just can't play you anymore. You're just an old guy that is no longer playing well. You're done.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that across the board at a couple different positions. It's not to say those aren't guys that – there's guys that aren't going to help move the program forward. And I think after a bye week, they've already tried the youth movement, and they've incorporated a lot of young guys. I think you're going to see a real young group moving forward.
Well, and hopefully some of those guys like a Steven Dix – that have gotten a lot of run in the last couple of weeks, a chance for him to kind of sit back, take a deep breath, watch some film, evaluate what he's done right, you know, for these
That's
young guys.
It's time to get in the nitty-gritty details with the guys you've already had a little burn
It's
with.
Almost like mini training camp this week. Like, they're not going to focus on anything but themselves, getting better, and we'll see if it
no
if it pays
to prep
off.
For anyone. You're not winning shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm glad us talking this out was a little bit therapeutic
cathartic
for me.
For you, yeah.
Yeah, because I still don't have high expectations, but if I just rewound the tapes and listened to our podcast 2 weeks ago even, after Miami rather, I would hear myself say, you know what, the season's done, let's get the young guys in, let's build for the future.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So now I'm back to that after I kind of jumped the gun a little bit with UNC and said, you know what, I think we can go beat Cuse, we can go beat Louisville, we can go beat Pitt. You know, we have a lot of games on this schedule that are still winnable. We just fumbled one this weekend that was winnable, but there's still wins out there.
Yeah, there's really only one more world beater left, and that is Clemson, and we said it before, we'll say it again. Obviously, that's a loss, and it's just a name or score type game for Clemson. But, yeah, there's no reason why a Pitt team, right, that's on a 3-4, they're on a 4-game losing streak, and they really are running out of answers, too, especially on offense. They just got thumped by a Notre Dame team that Florida State played better in their house, yeah. and Pitt got crushed at home by him. And yes, Syracuse is terrible. You know, so there will be opportunities.
Hey, Pitt doesn't. I mean, I'm sorry. Notre Dame doesn't blow people out like that.
Nope, not this year.
Or ever. Notre Dame just doesn't blow people out.
That was the best game Notre Dame's played this year by a long shot, yeah. too. I mean,
good
they
for
look,
them, man. They needed that after that Louisville dud the yeah, week before.
No doubt. Okay, let's talk about some other
things
going on in college
slate.
Football. Yeah,
we had it.
We've got an abbreviated three downs for you here because we're going to get into a little fun concept with the Big Ten. But let's go ahead and run through our three downs. The two of us combined will do three downs total. And I've got to start with this. Ole Miss, they're one of the most entertaining teams in the country. They're not any good. They don't win games. They might win 2-3 games all year. But my God, they're must-watch television every week.
Yeah, I need to tune in. I almost took them against Auburn. And my neighbor's an Ole Miss fan, huge Ole Miss fan. And I asked him what happened. He kind of explained it to me. They were in the red zone at a point. And, my son
a
found a boogie.
Yeah.
So, go ahead and break that down. But I mean, what I will say is Ole Miss Rebels now, they're throwing pick sixes. They're turning it over in the red zone. That is pretty funny, man. Nice booger.
They do everything. You're right. They turn it over. They allow scores. They run bad fake field goals. I mean, that's exactly what this team is at this point. And I mean, they're kind of emblematic of their head coach and all of the craziness and weirdness that he embraces in what he does. But it is just, it's fun to watch every week. And of course, against Auburn, another team that is just an enigma that is hard to predict on a week-in, week-out basis that lent itself to as entertaining a game between two teams that I don't think are particularly very good that ended up being one of the better ones of the day, in my mind, at least one of the more entertaining ones of the day. So that is certainly something that was enjoyable on Saturday. Perked me up a little bit after that Florida State loss. All right, second down here. We got to go to the Big 12 momentarily. And in the Big 12, the heavy hitters aren't at the top. Where is Texas? Where is Oklahoma? Well, both of those teams have two losses already. They're a couple games back in the conference standings. And this is a year that almost feels a little bit like 2014, in which Baylor and TCU are the two best teams in the league the whole year. Well, this year we're sitting there looking at, after Saturday, a top of the Big 12 standings that features Oklahoma State and Kansas State. And those two teams are almost similar this year in a way that you would never expect in years past. I mean, traditionally, Oklahoma State is kind of high-flying offense under Mike Gundy and defense optional. I mean, really kind of fit in that Big 12 mold, whereas Kansas State is a team that comes out and is one that kind of takes care of business, does things, well between the lines. Bill Snyder coached, and now they passed things on to Chris Klieman and kind of kept it going. And I think it's going to be fun to see what it looks like going forward with hopefully maybe a collision course of Kansas State and Oklahoma State, maybe competing for a Big 12 title when it's all said and done. And who knows? Two cultures that are significantly different, certainly, over the years and how those programs have been built. But
while I was putting that, sorry to interrupt, but while I was putting a booger on a tissue, had to find a tissue because we were out. Sorry for hopping in here like that. But did you tell our listeners that you think that LSU has Ryan Perilou again because he was number 11 and he's black?
I did not.
Okay, well, I had to rat you out because I thought that was the funniest thing that I've heard in a while. Forgot all about Ryan Perilou, and that was a great, great throwback for me. But so what were your three downs? Bullet point him here.
Well, I finished up Ole Miss, and then I went into the kind of somewhat entertaining top of the Big 12 features Kansas State and Oklahoma State.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that. Bill Snyder, the transition there from Bill Snyder and them still staying relevant, pretty impressive over there.
T.J. Finley, by the way, is Ryan Perilou Jr.'s name.
Okay.
And he looked great on Saturday.
So do you think Miles Brennan keeps his job when he's back?
that's already been put to rest by Ed Orgeron. He said there's no QB controversy. So, yeah, it's Miles Brennan's job when he comes back, yeah, when he's healthy.
I wonder how long that lasts over there in Baton Rouge.
I don't know. They still have more defense concerns than offense. I mean, Brennan wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
They again, even in a win on Saturday, gave up more yards per play than they achieved, and they're not going to win against teams that are better than South Carolina if they do that. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that was a must win for them, though, because South Carolina just came off a win against Auburn. And just logic tells you, I stayed away from that game from a line standpoint because logic tells you South Carolina getting two big wins. Big, LSU's not great this year, but
yeah, still, they're still the defending national champs. I don't care who's there or not. Right. I mean, that's a big win for Will Muschamp and one that he would circle and say, this is why you can't fire me.
So two, exactly. So two name brand wins, I guess how I'll phrase that.
No doubt.
In a year.
Two SEC wins.
You go, no, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. So I stayed away from it, but I just couldn't trust LSU, especially with a backup quarterback. Didn't love it at all. And yeah, they put up a number on them, man. They were very impressive. So that was good to see. My down, if I get the third down here.
Yeah, go for it.
Is UNC on a bounce back. I wanted to know where they were at mentally. And this one obviously hit close to home, so I needed to see them bounce back against a Bailey Hockman-led arch rival of NC State.
And Bailey Hockman didn't last very long.
No. He's just not good.
He's not good, no. He went like 1-for-5, and he got benched for the third stringer. And
if you were on the Willie Taggart teams and couldn't win a job at QB, you're terrible.
I felt so bad for the third string QB because he comes in after Hockman was terrible, drives him down the field. They run a great play action, release for the tight end, throws it in the end zone, and the dude just throws the ball up into the air, and it gets intercepted. And it's just, oh, my goodness. And then North Carolina. At that point, it would have been a one-score game with a touchdown. And North Carolina gets the pick. They go down. Obviously, that was all she wrote for NC State, who got obliterated in that game. And a real nice win for North Carolina against a rival.
Yeah, they bounced back and continued what they were doing against Florida State there in the second half to at least save some face and say, you know what? We got upset. Upsets happen in college football. And that all goes back to what we've been saying. Why didn't Florida State be the team to upset someone every now and then? And obviously we did, and UNC proved that, you know, we're still out here trying to achieve some goals this season.
Okay, let's take a look at the Big Ten a little deeper because the big story, of course, as we talked about on this program last week, was what to expect from the conference as it started its season this past weekend, and then really the majority of the big storylines from the weekend came from this conference. They had a lot of eyeballs on them, a lot of big-time games, both the Fox
that Indiana-Penn State game was wild.
I mean, the Big Ten Network broadcast three games. I was glad I had the Big Ten Network this week, that's for sure. But I'm going to give you some overreactions, underreactions. You tell me which one you think it is and why, and we'll start with this. Michigan is a Big Ten title contender. Overreaction, underreaction.
Am I allowed to say I think that's
right? You think that's right on? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that's an underreaction. I don't think they're elite in the sense that they're number one over Ohio State yet, but Ohio State went out and struggled with Nebraska, and I think that more so plays into it.
Struggled early. I mean, Justin Fields.
Slow out the gates.
Justin Fields had one incompletion,
what,
and it was
20
a drop.
For 21, was it? Yeah.
He did not struggle.
23, 24. No,
the offense did not particularly struggle. They just gave up a few points there early as they got their feet under.
Yeah,
them.
I agree. I just think it's one of those things where Michigan eventually is going to have to beat Ohio State. And I don't think it's outlandish to think that this Michigan team, the way they put up offensive numbers, which is something they just don't do. That's the difference to me. Their defense under Don Brown, under that defensive coordinator, they're always good.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about that side of the ball. This was a game to open the season. That's a tough open.
At Minnesota, cold weather, well-coached team, a team that returned its quarterback.
No fans there, which helps, but... Yeah. But it really was a game that opened my eyes. I'd say it's right where it needs to be. I think Michigan is a Big Ten title contender.
It's just, and I know it was only one game, but seeing year two of the Josh Gattis offense with a guy who I think really fits it in Joe Milton, I mean, they're running RPO, and you actually had to respect the quarterback running it.
I told you, he's an athletic guy. Did we ever look up where he's from? I blew that last week. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
So
no,
where'd they have it? Overreaction? Or
well, they just broke it down. So okay. It's just like, this is why. It's Bill Connolly. He does all the numbers on this stuff. So.
I love Bill Connolly. Yeah. Me and Bods text about his
and,
work
and
the,
his counterpoint was
week.
Minnesota's defense just might not be very good.
Right, and that's okay, but when does Michigan ever blow anyone out, even bad teams? They just don't blow people out.
All right. Ohio State is still invincible.
I think that's an overreaction based on what I just said. They're slow out the gates to a Nebraska team that doesn't have a lot of talent. Bunch of corn huskers, literally. I mean, I think that's an overreaction. Will they get better as the year goes on is the question. I think the answer to that's yes, but invincible, absolutely not.
I think it's just going to depend on, does the running game kind of step up to support Justin Fields? Because obviously they lost J.K. Dobbins, and they're trying to figure out kind of who their bell cow is or if they can get it done by committee to replace him. Because Fields ran the ball more against Nebraska than he did all last year in a single game. So that's something where, yes, he's in the best shape of his life. He's gone vegan. He's slimmed down. He thinks he's at a better playing weight. But, yeah, you just don't want your quarterback taking that many shots if he doesn't have to.
No.
Especially in an all-league season. All right, so I would still think that until somebody beats Ohio State, I'm just not going to believe that anybody can beat Ohio State.
So invincible what, against Big Ten opponents or invincible?
Yeah, I'll just say I think Big Ten-wise, I don't want to get too going in. As of right now, I would make them the third best team in the country still, though.
Okay, and I'm okay with that.
I mean, I go Clemson, Bama, especially after the Jalen Waddle injury, which you got to kind of check. But Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, I feel pretty confident about 1-2-3 there.
Yep.
Right now.
I'm with you.
All right. Next up, Graham Mertz, the Wisconsin quarterback, is a Heisman contender. Now, this is obviously
pre-COVID.
Yeah, whatever happens with the COVID deal, let's just throw that out the window here. Hypothetically, let's just say he's back sooner rather than later. And, I mean, the guy looked as good as any quarterback for Wisconsin since Russell Wilson?
Better than anyone since Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
easily.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Hornibrook?
Yeah.
The old horn dog? I mean, no way. No. I mean, I thought he looked awesome. I got duped because I didn't know the game was on Friday, and I was looking forward to watching Wisconsin.
I know, yeah.
And then I woke up Saturday, and I'm watching highlights of Wisconsin. I'm like, no way I missed that because I was looking forward to seeing a four-star recruit there finally. A big name in Wisconsin terms playing ball. Man, this early after one game, he's a redshirt freshman. Feels like an overreaction, but the way he played, what my eyes tell me, I don't know. They might have someone.
I agree with you there. I mean, it's how many.
It's just too early.
I mean, he basically, you could chalk him into September Heisman hype, even though it's late October because of the way that their season has played out. But remember Kenny Hill, anyone, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been plenty of moments of guys having unbelievable debuts, and next thing you know, they're
everything from there is down. I'd say overreaction just because the book tells you don't believe it this early, but
also,
he did look good.
Illinois defense.
Right.
Not very good. All right, next up, Northwestern is a West contender in the Big Ten, and Purdue might be two. We can split those up.
Didn't Purdue just lose?
No, Purdue won. Purdue went and beat Iowa.
That's right, they did. They were three-point dogs. I don't know squat about Northwestern. They have Ramsey at QB.
Yeah, the Indiana transfer at QB, and they have a new play caller this year after they fired their longtime guy, which, I mean, they had one of the worst offenses in FBS football for the last couple of years, so it was long overdue, but they came out and looked competent on offense. I mean, they blew out Maryland. I mean, there was like 63-7
Maryland,
or something.
You know, they love taking a good ass kicking. So I don't, Maryland, that's like their thing. Fear the turtle. No one fears it, and they still say it because they know it's a joke. I'm not putting any overreaction. I can't take it.
How do you feel about Purdue?
Hey, you know, I love
Rondale Moore this past weekend.
Yep,
not quite back from that knee, but they still went out there and looked pretty good.
Hey, and Jeff Brohm wasn't even there.
Yeah,
Jeff Brohm's coming back. Now, I like them to upset a couple teams, but they're still Purdue at the end of the day. You know, I said last week I expressed my affinity for them. Love me some Purdue, but yeah, I'm going to say overreaction.
So you like who, Wisconsin still in the West?
I still like Wisconsin. They're always well-rounded. They're always the same team every year. I think Purdue's going to have to rely a little bit too much on non-Big Ten-type stuff, which only Ohio State is allowed to do. And what I mean by that is deep balls, explosive plays.
Right.
Wisconsin's going to say, we're going to run it down your throat. We're going to grind it. And now we also have a QB that can hit you over the top to a tight end. Not to a receiver, to a tight end.
No doubt.
He did hit a receiver here and there, but you get the picture there.
All right, Penn State was overrated.
Overreaction?
Oh, yeah. Or underreaction?
No, I think that's a... can I say an underreaction?
Yeah, you still think they're better than...
I kind of want it to be spot on, but yeah, I'd say slightly underreaction.
I mean, they played a... What I think to be, I mean, it was an 8-win Indiana team.
They got upset.
That might be better than they were last year, this year, on the road. And I know, like, whatever. I know people say, like, oh, road environment's not the same this year. Obviously, you're not dealing with the crowd. You still have to get in a vehicle. You still have to travel. You still have to sleep in a bed that's not your own. There's still the aspect of traveling. Until they take all the games and they put them in a neutral site, I'm not going to believe that there's not some sort of a home field advantage. And, you know, Indiana, they won the game on a series of miracles. Yeah. I mean, as much as I want to, and I all
and
the respect
a potential
to Indiana,
non-touchdown all the on that call.
Right. The 2-point conversion may or may not have been good.
Yeah.
But hey, all the respect in the world to Indiana because they led the entire game. They outplayed Penn State, save for kind of late in that fourth quarter where the tight end dropped a touchdown that went right through his hands that would have put him up by 2 scores. So I think Indiana deserved to win the game. I don't know if the way it played out was the best way for them to win the game. I mean, it was the most entertaining, but...
Quarterback in the fourth quarter at 99 yards passing. Penix.
Yeah. I mean, I still think that this team, Penn State, first game with a new offensive coordinator. They're missing their running back, who may be their best offensive player, who's out for the foreseeable future, if not the year, with an
Kane?
Undisclosed
Noah
element.
Kane?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think that's right. And then, give him a moment. I mean, undisclosed health ailment. I mean, there's rumblings that it could be heart-related or something like that, but all right. So we both think that we're going to take a deep breath on Penn State. Okay, how about this? Rutgers is decent.
I saw that score and was surprised. You know what? I want to believe it. I'm going to say that spot on. I want to believe it. Greg Schiano, back where he belongs. He should have never left. He shouldn't be anywhere but Rutgers. I absolutely love that he's back. And they played Jersey tough, and they put up some points. I liked it.
I think it's an overreaction to sit there and say something like, they're good. But this was just decent. That was the line. I think they're going to be competitive. I mean, they already look better coached. They already look better organized. They already look more competent.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of this, Michigan State might be really, really bad.
Oh,
we've already seen what it looks like when you're in a...
For that coach to go. We've been saying that for...
Well, no, it's a new coach this year, remember?
Oh, that's
this
right.
Is the whole
D'Antonio
thing.
Stepped
down. So Michigan State, I feel like, is in a very similar situation to Florida State, right? Like, they're
stepped
on
down
the decline.
To take an athletic position.
Yeah,
after
he got his $4.5 million bonus, stepped down like a day later.
They hired
the old Colorado coach, Mel Tucker.
Mel Tucker.
Who, of course, was... Georgia, he was a Jags interim there back in 2011.
Defensive coordinator there and then got the interim tag. Yep.
I think he will. I'm not going to
pass
judgment.
By the way, I don't. What did he do at Colorado? I couldn't believe he got that job.
Well, he's a Michigan State. He has a background there.
I know, but what did he do at Colorado where you're like, oh, yeah, he's good at this?
Who are you going to hire? There's a problem. I mean,
you'll find a diamond in the rough, App State OC. You know what I mean? Like a Tulsa
the App State coach
OC.
Already got hired.
Yeah,
Eli Drinkwitz had already.
They
the
get
problem
poached.
The problem was they went and Mark D'Antoni waited
till December, right?
Yeah, he waited till so late after the cycle had ended.
Oh,
essentially,
wait, guys, y'all were gonna pay me $4 million.
It's like, hey, after
I do retire.
After the signing period, after he got his bonus, and then they had to go find somebody. It's not like there was a ton of people to get at that point. All the good ones, quote unquote, had already been hired. And Mel Tucker, I think he'll have a chance there, But the problem is that's a rebuilding project, kind of like Florida State. No, you didn't get the off season, the regular off season, and it's just going to be a long, slow journey back up for Michigan State going forward. I think it's not going to be some quick fix, some easy fix, because they were on the decline the last couple of years anyway.
Yeah, no, they looked bad, and they opened this weekend as a 32-point dog, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Let me tell you that.
It is a big line. I did see it earlier, and woof, things got bad for Michigan State. All right, while you're looking that up, it's probably a good enough time as any to transition to the Turco trifecta here.
I thought we might.
Yeah, 1-2 week. You already mentioned it earlier. You're now 8-12 on the year. But let's run through your list. You got Bama covering against Tennessee. They covered the 20-point spread there. As you mentioned, went heavy on Florida State to cover +5. They
horrible
didn't come
idea.
Close.
Had them multiple ways.
And then the one you got really burned on, Baylor +10. They lose the game by
11.
And
devastated. So let me interrupt you, because Baylor and Florida State, well, Florida State I liked a lot, so I would have left that in there. But I took UNC -14.5. And I was like, Baylor +10 feels like a good number. Texas, if anything, I pushed that 11. That hurts. That's a bad beat.
Yeah, oh, a real bad beat. And I felt bad for you when I looked it up this morning and saw exactly how you lost it, too. But you did get your lock of the week. You had Steelers +1. Of course, they win the game against the Titans. Another kind of miracle performance there. And you are now 4-1 in lock of the weeks. What is that Michigan State line this weekend against their rival Michigan?
25 against their arch rival Michigan. Talking about a slap to the face.
I mean, not that long ago, we were Jalen Watts Jackson.
Yeah. On the block punt.
Into the end zone. I mean, these two, Michigan State had turned the tables, and little brother was Michigan, but it doesn't look like it's going to be like that this weekend. All right, so what do you have to say for yourself? You've already described it a little bit here beforehand. But
I'm consistent. I like what I'm doing. I'm just a 1-2 kind of guy on the Turco trifecta, and you know, 2 weeks ago, I do well in the NFL. When I don't put it on the trifecta, when I do put it on the trifecta, that didn't work. I'm just a 1-2 guy. So what our listeners should do, look at the three games.
Pick the most obvious
one. And say, you know what? There's one on here that is not like the other two. And that is the one you should bet your mortgage on.
How do you anticipate mixing and matching a little bit here, going all college this weekend?
I'm mixing and matching.
Okay, yeah.
I have to.
Because you went all NFL, had a bad, not a great week, to all college.
Remember I told you, I said, I texted you this. I said, do you care if I do NFL? You're like, no, man, it's your
man,
picks.
It's your trifecta.
I said, okay, I'm done with
college.
Not
the
Manzi
trifecta.
College has screwed me. I will screw them. Screw you, college. And I took them off, only did NFL. That didn't work. So I'm going to do a little mix and match this week. Three of my favorite picks. I'm going to really analyze it better. Locks of the week have been great. Feel good about those.
You've been good on those.
Yeah, I don't.
Been good on those.
3-1, 4-1.
You're 4-1 now on the lock of the week.
4-1. Yeah, I mean, that is just, you take that to the bank and you just ride with me all the way home. So we'll have another one of those coming up. And I got to get right. I'm not that far in the
hole. Got to get right.
I really am not. I'm battling.
Well, stay tuned. And follow us on Twitter at sportsbar_pod. That's where Alex's Turco Trifecta gets posted on either Thursdays or Fridays, depending on when we remember to put it up. But it does go out late in the week. And you got to follow it if you want to try and find that one game that Alex is going to win.
I'm looking at the lines right now. Scott brought up the lines, and now I'm kind of sucked in here. I accidentally
see some ones you like.
Yeah,
yeah.
I might. We're gonna discuss after the. Yeah. Actually, maybe we'll talk this through, and you can guide me through a couple of my college picks. I've been okay on NFL.
Maybe I can help you out there. Yeah. We'll see. Sportsbar_pod. Check it out. We'll be posting the trifecta later on in the week. Again, we're coming to you live to tape from the Ice Mule Coolers Studios, Sports Bar 15 at checkout to save 15% off. I don't have a Cold as Ice or a Waller of the Week this week. I want to save those for when we got a really good one. So we're just going to jet right into the NFL here. But we had to at least give a mention to our good friends over at Ice Mule Coolers, as it is party season, and you're going to want to get your cooler so that you can celebrate responsibly, celebrate in whatever maybe little house get-together. Maybe you're going to be sitting out on the driveway passing out candy for Halloween so that you can, you know, reduce those touch points a little more open air. I mean, I just like the concept of sitting out in the driveway with a couple of adult beverages anyway for
non-COVID
that, right?
Year.
Yeah, that's kind of especially if the weather's nice.
That's what I do every year. Yeah. I mean, you sit out front, you set up a couple tables and listen to music, drink some beer.
And of course, you're pulling the beers out of the ice meal cooler. Where else would you be pulling them out of?
That's right.
All right. Well, that is coming up, Halloween this weekend. We hope you all are safe. Have fun. And, of course, we'll transition into plenty more opportunities for those ice meal coolers to get used coming up in the next couple of months. Holiday season upon us, officially now starting this week. Sports Bar 15 for 15% off at checkout. Get your ice meal cooler today. On to the NFL, and I have to give credit where credit is due because this segment was created by none other than Alex. And a little inside the business here, Alex usually goes, what are we going to talk about? And then I give him an outline of all the things I have come up with.
I wasn't going to pat myself on the back because I'm about a full year out of ever giving you a pat on the back. So we always appreciate your creativity. But here's what sparked it, and I'll let you intro it, and I'll tell you where it came from.
Well, you said yesterday, you text me and you go, I've got an idea, NFL predictable and unpredictable. Which teams in the NFL are the most predictable? Which are the most unpredictable? And I said, dang, yeah, that's really good. That's a really good concept right there.
And what happened, and I'll go ahead and lead it off, my unpredictable team, and unfortunately, you know, we're transitioning from a betting segment, so I'll bring it into that. I took the Patriots with points in a teaser, right? So I'm thinking Patriots losing two straight weeks seems crazy. And I don't like the Patriots this year, but to bet against Belichick 2 weeks in a row seems silly. I'm going with the Pats to keep it close, 3-point game, worst case, if not win it. So you may think I'm saying the Patriots are unpredictable. No, I'm saying the 49ers are unpredictable.
Yeah.
I'm having a really, really hard time, and you know me, I'm always thinking about the lines. The way I'm coming from is I don't even know how to pick these games when the 49ers play. Garoppolo all of a sudden is having a resurgence. He's looking dynamic. He's throwing the ball well. He's throwing it downfield. The running game, injury after injury, doesn't matter. It's plug and play in the Shanahan system as expected.
Right.
And anyone that is Mike Shanahan's family member, if not, I mean, his son even, has the success to just churning out running backs. And they're playing really good football despite all of the injuries. Having a hard time reading the 49ers. I think they're wildly unpredictable.
No doubt. And for all those that left Jimmy Garoppolo for dead 2 weeks ago.
Hey, my hand's up. My hand's up.
He looks healthy again after he dealt with that ankle issue, and he's playing as good as he's ever played with the Niners. And
I'd agree.
And, I mean, that's not a bad Patriots defense that they carved up on Sunday.
Not supposed to be.
And Patriots have their own issues, that's for sure. Bench Cam Newton at the end of the game. I mean, could we be seeing maybe I've got a concept. I'm just going to save it. I've got a concept for a segment on a future show coming up, but I'm going to make a little mental note and then write it down. But
because then I don't have to keep coming up with this golden content.
it's great. But yeah, I'm right with you on the 49ers, who are just, I mean, forget trying to bet on them or trying to guess what they're going to do. I mean, it is week in, week out. It is hard to pick.
I can't read them at all.
My unpredictable team, it's the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going in the same division, and it's a team that,
wow, I like that
at
a
times
lot.
This year has looked incredible. Sunday night, they beat the Seahawks, who we sat here on this program very recently, talked about how, I mean, we were joking almost about, can the AFC or the NFC West get every team into the playoffs in this new expanded playoff format? And we're like, you know what? The Seahawks still seem like the best team. Seahawks defense is still pretty bad. Really bad, actually.
I was going to say terrible, in fact.
And
that's got to leave the door cracked for everyone else in the division.
And Russell Wilson wasn't Superman, per se, on Sunday night. And I tell you what, that there's this feeling of apparently Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury looked at each other, laughed on the sidelines yesterday and said, this feels like a Big 12 game. And I think they're as equipped as anybody in that division to win a game like that because they know how to draw it up. They're comfortable in situations
sling
like
it
that.
Around in a shootout.
And they like to be kind of wide open, exactly. And the Cardinals are frisky. They're fun. They started off hot. They kind of fell back down to earth, and now they look like they're trending back in the right direction. But who knows? They could go out there and lay an egg again next week. It's a hard team because you figure they're still kind of young. They're still kind of figuring it out, and a hard team to buy into.
Young is the word there. And look at Mario Edwards Jr. flashing here, Florida State defensive end for the Bears. I didn't know he was still in the league.
Very
nice.
They got lined up on the inside, too.
Yeah, he put on a lot of weight consistently, but he's still quick. And Eddie Goldman sitting out. Two Noles there on the Bears. But, no, I agree with you. You took the word out of my mouth to describe the Cardinals when, of course, unpredictable is the word of the segment, but young.
Yep.
And I think that's a lot of it. It's like, man, they do have talent. They look pretty good in a lot of areas, but it's not consistent. You don't see it there a lot.
Nope. All right. Who is your most predictable team? And as we should put it in, I said it before we started recording, but obviously the New York Jets are the most predictable team in their putridness.
They're off limits because they're absolutely terrible.
It doesn't even count. So we're not using them.
My most predictable team is the Atlanta Falcons and how they can blow a lead. Did you have that written down?
I had that. There was one of my teams written down, yes.
Yeah, okay. So
every week it's the same. Different head coach, it's the same.
Ever since they went 28-3 and blew that, they're cursed. I mean, that's really all I have to say about that franchise. They are absolutely cursed. They can't hold a lead. They panic. They freeze. There's too much pressure. Todd Gurley even tried to ice the lead, fall down at the 1 yard line so the clock would tick and they could kneel and hold on, preserve a victory. Couldn't even do that. He accidentally scored. Can you believe that's a problem? Accidentally scoring. God forbid a team that's terrible scores. No, in this scenario, it gave the Lions enough time to run back down the field and beat the can't hold a lead Atlanta Falcons.
Two teams that are, you know, a Spider-Man meme, you know, they're sitting there. You take an early lead and blow it. You take an early lead and blow it. And that's exactly what we have seen from both of those teams. So it was very appropriate that whoever was going to have the ball last would end up winning that game. And, yeah, we said it when we were watching the highlight before we started recording. Hard to blame Todd Gurley. I mean, he tried. He's lining up to break a tackle at, like, the 3 yard line, and he tried to hold up and just – you know how it is when you get kind of your body weight shifted and you just can't hold up and – undoubtedly, that was what ended up burning them. But still, the defense had opportunities to not give up a game-winning touchdown, not give up a bomb to Kenny Golladay to set up the touchdown and all that jazz. But, man, that was another heartbreaking, heart-wrenching. If there's any heart left to wrench or break for Falcons fans at this point. All right, my most predictable team.
Let alone most of those Falcons fans are Braves fans, too.
Yeah, I know. So they're probably all. They haven't watched sports for a week.
Yeah, your heart at this point has frozen over, so I don't even know if they care about sports
anymore. They're like, when does Atlanta's FC play again?
Yeah, and they're probably Georgia
Atlanta
Bulldog
United,
fans,
I mean,
who just don't win national titles.
Right.
So what a great area to be a fan.
It's a running joke, and it has been for a while. My most predictable team, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Scott, you owe me this. I love it.
So the Steelers, it doesn't matter. Like, and this is how they're predictable. Like, they can go out there. Big Ben was not good yesterday. I mean, he looked like 5 years ago Big Ben, where he's throwing balls and you're like, why are you throwing that? And it gets picked off, and he had three picks on Sunday, and like,
hey, we lost the turnover battle,
but it just didn't
and
matter.
Won the game.
But it just didn't matter. And that's what it is with this team. Like, it just doesn't matter this year. They can have a game in which a guy gets injured, a key defensive player, or they can have a game in which Big Ben doesn't play well, or they can have a game where their one running back doesn't run well, so they feature the other guy. You know, it's just doesn't seem to matter what the scenario is.
They have
is.
To go plug and play Chase Claypool.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't matter what the scenario is. The Steelers are going to find a way to win this year, and they're undefeated. They win the battle of the unbeatens on Sunday against the Titans, who rallied to get it close with a little help from Ben Roethlisberger to keep them close. I mean, they could have put them away at the end of the first half, but this is just a team that knows how to win this year, and I give them a lot of credit. And I'm staring down the barrel of losing my little friendly wager with you.
So this is what we're doing. We established this in was it a text or on Twitter? I think it was a text with Mike.
I think it was a text, yeah.
And We have another wager going, don't we? What's the one we texted about? We'll pull it up real quick. But earlier this year, Scott said his overrated team, I believe, overrated.
Pittsburgh
is
Steelers,
that the term?
Yeah.
Steelers. Who's your 2-0 or 3-0 team?
And
that's overrated.
I just don't like. Yeah, and I just didn't like.
You didn't like the way we were winning, but guess what?
They're still winning
Steeler
the same way.
Football, and you know what? We won ugly on the Denver Broncos, and that's when you said that, and it was fair. But I think I'm getting my, what?
Your comeuppance, yeah. Yeah, you're getting your just desserts on this.
They're
one.
They're playing well. But Guess what? This weekend, Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Baltimore Ravens. This is the time to figure out if the Steelers can win this division. Because I personally think they got swept by the Ravens last year with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph at QB. I think we split that series. And then you go sweep the Bengals. You have to sweep the Bengals. And then you probably split the Browns. You probably shouldn't. But you split the Browns. You split the Ravens.
Sure.
And you win the division. I mean, that right there, you look at the rest of the schedule, it's so easy from here on out. We beat the Titans. And the rest from here, we got the Ravens twice. And we're in the Bills. We're smooth sailing other than that. The Jags, come on.
The other one was who gets fired first, Adam Gase or Doug Marrone.
That's what it was.
An eye out on that one.
Hey, I still have Marrone in that, by the way.
Yeah, and I've got Gase. So we'll see.
Gase just saved his job with a battle.
What happens if they both make it to the, I don't know, we'll figure it out. If they both make it through the season?
Then we drink together.
Okay, that's fine.
God forbid. That's fair. Do that every Monday
anyway.
Minimum.
All right, do you have any honorable mentions? I just got one.
Honorable, I kind of mentioned unpredictable for honorable mention with the Patriots. They're hard to read, but they're almost pretty predictable in the fact that their offense just stinks this year. So,
Steelers, you got them written
Steelers
down, too.
So you kind of took my honorable mention there. I think they're predictable in the way that they're just going to play a tough-ass football game for 60 minutes. Whether it's pretty, ugly, it doesn't matter. They're probably going to come out on top because they're just accustomed to dogfights.
Yeah. I've got the as far as unpredictable, the Raiders. I just can't get a read week in, week out, whether or not they're going to be in a game or out of a game or what the deal is. I mean, sometimes they play well enough to win. Sometimes they play well enough to win and they lose. Sometimes they just get blown out. I mean, it's just they're a hard one to get a read on. And then the Eagles are another predictable team for just the wackiness of they're going to play in a weird game and they're going to come close and then they're going to rally and they're going to lose. Like that's what it just feels like.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And another predictable for me, just a little tidbit on the Seahawks, is that if they're playing a night game, it's going to be an absolutely electric game and it's going
to
come down to the last minute.
Amen
every
to that.
Every week. Or, I'm sorry, every time.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's our predictable, unpredictable for the NFL as we continue to make our way
through.
How
about this? We haven't done this ever. Yeah, no, I think we're halfway through the season, which is a little depressing to say. We've never done this, so I'm putting you on the spot. I didn't tell you we were doing this because it just hit me right now.
Okay.
Because as we've set up this podcast to sit here, drink beer, and just have a talk on the couch, this is a question I ask when we're off air. I do this all the time. You do this to me. So here's my question. Tua's playing this. I'm really looking forward to seeing Tua this weekend play for the Dolphins. I'm excited to see that. What are you looking forward to this weekend as far as this slate here? And like I said, you're on the spot. If you don't have anything, that's okay. I just wanted to mention Tua getting the start there kind of surprised me.
Well, can the Jags beat the bye week? I'll be watching for that.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that.
You know, jumping out the
here
page
you go.
To me.
49ers, Seahawks. I mean, that game right there, that's must-watch TV.
Yeah, jumping off the page, you already mentioned Pittsburgh and Baltimore. That's the game of the week. I can't believe this is a 1 o'clock. I mean,
they did that with the Titans game, too. It drove me crazy.
What a missed opportunity there. And then if you're just kind of interested in like teams that don't manage to get over that hump, how about two teams in the Raiders and the Browns that are they for real type teams?
Yeah.
And
that's a loser go home type game.
Like the both of those teams need that win to kind of help establish credibility.
I think this is a phenomenal slate this week, and I looked at it earlier, so that's why I unfortunately had to throw you on the spot. Yeah. Nicely done, by the way, as you've recovered from that. But Dolphins playing the Rams. Rams are playing right now. I think that's a very manageable game for Tua, but he is playing a Jalen Ramsey. He is playing Aaron Donald. Low-scoring affair, we'll see. Dolphins were hot before the
bye. Well, they're banking. The Dolphins are banking on putting Tua in means that they're in the playoff hunt. You know, that, they're not doing this.
No, no, this isn't for fun.
Right. If they're this is because they think they have a team that's good enough to make the playoffs.
So let's see what
they're looking
can
at
do.
The wounded duck. The wounded duck New England Patriots who play Buffalo on the road this weekend. If there's ever a time for the Bills to finally beat the Patriots, it's this weekend.
That's,
as they're licking their wounds.
That's exactly right. Another game that I've highlighted on my list is that game because the Bills have looked awful. Josh Allen, who we finally apologized to on this podcast, I think we apologized too early. We should have stuck with our gut. And we said, you know, he looks good. I think he can turn the corner. I'm going back into my shell where I say, you know what? He has a strong arm. He's athletic. I don't know anything more than that. Because when they make him throw from the pocket, which the Jets did that, Jets can make you throw
from
the pocket.
They're down 10-0 to the Jets.
It's a problem.
And they won 18-10, but like that's not a game. That's a game you should be blowing out the Jets.
Problem.
Yeah. Doesn't look good.
So, but I'm excited for this weekend slate. I think it's a good one coming up. And, you know, it's Halloween weekend. Some spooky stuff
could
happen.
It could be some weird stuff. You never know. Absolutely never know. All right, let's wrap with this, Alex. World Series wrapping up this week. Two games to go, potentially. It's going to require the Rays winning on Tuesday night to force a game 7. I'm decked out today. It's not like I'm a super Rays fan. I honestly don't even care that much who wins this series. I just want to see a game 7. Yeah. So that's why I'm supporting here. But the Rays improbable win on Saturday night to even up the series again, kind of force, as they say, a best of 3. Do you feel like the Rays have one more kind of charmed run in them here to force a game 7 to maybe even win this series? Or have the Dodgers finally paid the piper long enough and they get that long-awaited? By the way, I need to make a correction. I said 1983 a couple weeks ago on this podcast. 1988 was the last time the Dodgers won the World Series. Still before either you or I was born.
Yep.
So it's a pretty long time ago.
No, I'd say so, yeah.
Especially for a franchise like the Dodgers, which are, you know, storied, historic, certainly well-respected, and have plenty of money to throw around. But what do you see happening here as this series and the season hits its closing stanza?
I feel like the Rays actually are going to force a game 7. They just feel like a magical team. A lot of that also has to do with them pitching Snell. On Tuesday.
And the Dodgers are throwing relievers. They're going with the staff game. So.
Right.
And they lost the last time they did that.
Oh, whoa. Wild play here in the Rams game. But, no, I agree. They're going staff. Snell's their ace for the Dodgers. And, the Rays.
Yeah.
I just feel like they have a lot of tricks up their sleeve, a lot of magic. They felt like that crazy win that they had on Saturday night where there were two drop balls and...
I mean, that's Little League stuff.
Yeah,
but.
No, it looked fake. I was like, man, the Dodgers lost that way? That doesn't feel real. In an 8-7 game, all these games have been tight. It's not like the Rays should have their head down about anything. I feel like they forced game 7. I still think Dodgers end up pulling it out.
I agree with you. I think that the Rays have kind of one more in them. You're right. I mean, this is what you have Blake Snell for. And I think even the Dodgers are kind of sitting there going, okay, they're throwing their guy.
Right.
And if we win this, we're playing with house money at this point. They're like, we got two chances to win one. And then they'll have it come around to where they'll feel better about themselves in game 7, I guess. But they're going to go staff here for this one. And it might even be, they probably could throw Buehler again on Wednesday, I would imagine, if game 7 gets forced because he pitched on Friday night. So that'd be what, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? Yeah. So they'll throw Walker Buehler with a chance to win the World Series, and I think they would like their chances regardless of who the Rays had going opposite him in that spot, which would end up being maybe Charlie Morton or maybe somebody else. I'm not sure.
Big game Morton.
They could probably combo a bunch of different dudes into that situation. But that's it. If it's Charlie Morton who just does nothing but win game 7s, and then all of a sudden maybe you're like, well, can the Rays actually do this thing here? Are you tempting fate, Dave Roberts, by not maybe going Buehler on short rest? But I still think in the long run, they have been on the front foot this whole series.
Yep.
It feels like the Rays have been kind of playing
having
catch
to
up.
Answer.
Yeah,
every
they're
game
the one
is,
that has to answer. And
every game is, let's see if we can answer please wrap him up.
And eventually they're just going to run out of answers.
Yeah, I don't think they can do it game after game. It's exhausting.
No doubt.
To always play catch up. It's a lot of pressure. It's easier to play up, obviously, than... than to play that catch-up role. So, yeah, I think Dodgers pull it out. I do think the Rays, like I said, have enough magic in the tank, though, to maybe force a game seven.
Yeah. Minor rant. Can we get these first pitches a little bit earlier? Like, what's first it?
Timing-wise,
like
yeah.
It's like 8:10.
Yeah.
These games take 4+ hours.
It's tough. And you know what? I feel...
Where's you out?
It's a little bit criminal what they're doing, because I'm not watching it, and this is one of the best World Series to date that I can remember, as far as just back and forth. Every game is a tight game. There's excitement. There's bombs. I love it. But I'm having to catch a lot of it on highlights, and and that's not because I'm not interested. It's because it's Saturday while college football's on. And then I'm like, oh, wait, the World Series was on tonight? I missed that. That sucks.
Well, that Saturday, it wasn't even college football. At that point, I was just like, I was so tired, I was just falling asleep, and the game didn't end until almost 1 a.m.
Yeah, oh,
I mean,
know.
It's...
They're late, and they're squeezed in with this coronavirus schedule.
Yeah, now, it works out perfectly for them now, because they're nothing else. Tuesday night is the World Series.
I love
they're
that.
They're going up against nothing else.
They should do a doubleheader.
And if they get Wednesday to Game 7, there's also nothing
first
else.
First pitch, I mean, 3 p.m., second game, Game 2 of the doubleheader. 8 p.m. pitch. Love
you know it. I'm an MLS guy, but even I'm not going to sit here and watch MLS over World Series Game 6 and potentially Game 7. Yeah. And that there's no football. There's no debates. There's no nothing else to conflict with these last couple games, potentially last one or two games of the World Series, and we will see hopefully some dramatics, because guess what? I'm through. I'm committed. I will stay up to the final out for these next two games, because there's only two left tops.
Gotta
and
watch
I gotta and I gotta watch them. But yeah, and in a baseball season like another, in a sports year as part of a year unlike any other, here we are coming down with some more drama and some more excitement late, and that's all we could ask for, right?
Yeah, like I said, I just want it to be on a day where I can watch it, and I'm looking forward to today, the day of the release of our podcast here. You can listen to this as you're in the car on the way to work, on the way home from work. If you're still working remote, you can listen to it in the house. Get everything squared away before first pitch.
You got plenty of time.
Sports Bar podcast, and then right into the World Series. Gotta love that.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoy the end of the World Series. We hope you enjoy the upcoming football slate. Again, check us out on Twitter at sportsbar_pod. You'll get that Turco trifecta coming out later on this week, as well as some other goodies. But let's go ahead and put a wrap on this week's episode. 4 Outs. I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.